The Warrior Soul podcast is written, produced, and edited by me, Chris Albert. Our mission is to provide tools, tactics, strategies, and ideas to U.S. military veterans and anybody else willing to listen to help them to navigate toward living their absolute best lives. If you find these episodes helpful, please share them out with somebody that you know of that can use them. And if you really like the podcast, please also head over to iTunes and write us a written rating and a review. It really helps us to spread word about the show, and it really helps to get these tools in the hands of others who really need them. This podcast is sponsored by F-Bomb Nutrition. They make awesome, delicious packets of macadamia nut butters. They mix them up with chocolate, with sea salt, with pecan butter. They're absolutely delicious, and they also have a number of other fat-fueled snacks, like their meat sticks and their cheese crisps. They're amazing people who are sending boxes of this stuff out to the troops on the front lines, and they're offering 20% off to our listeners on their first orders. If you head over to www.dropanfbomb.com and use the code WarriorSoul at checkout, you'll get 20% off of that first order. And I'm going to keep the announcements short and sweet today. If you can, stick around to the end. I got a really special announcement about a brotherhood that we're creating here at Warrior Soul. So I hope you enjoy this episode. I hope you get a lot out of it. And without delay, let's get into it.
This is Chris Albert, and I'm here to remind you of one thing. Someday, you're going to die. Now, that's not some morbid statement or scary idea. It's solid fact. Your time here on this earth is limited. And you need to be reminded of this as much as possible for one simple reason. To live your best life while you can. This is the Warrior Soul Podcast.
You know, I've experienced sadness in my life many times. I've experienced grief from the loss of a loved one. I've experienced heartbreak from the loss of a woman. But I can tell you that there has never been such an empty feeling in my life as when I started out my entrepreneurial career. And I knew that my livelihood, my paycheck, my entire self-respect was going to revolve around my actions. But yet, I was not able to figure out exactly what to do. Staring off at a computer screen for hours at a time, frustrated, slamming my fist on the desk repeatedly because I just couldn't figure out what I needed to do to get my business to work. And unfortunately, that's the story of a lot of new entrepreneurs. You know, when you get into business, it's a huge transition. You can no longer expect a paycheck. You have to work for every penny. And you gain an entire new perspective on what money really is, which is an exchange of value. And if you're not able to provide value, and you're not able to notify people that you can provide value, well, then you're not going to get the money. And it's a scary, scary experience, but it is a worthwhile one. And today's guest, Mr. Rhett Power, he is the founder and former CEO of a company called Wild Creations. It's a toy company. And when Rhett started this company, he was coming out of a government career. He worked for USAID, and he got into this business opportunity with a lot of hope. But at first, it wasn't so easy for him. He ended up getting into a position where the company wasn't taking off. He was traveling around to different trade shows, trying to get a deal that would allow the company to get enough money to move forward. And he was down to his last tank of gas that he could afford, his last dollars. And a vendor had advised him to go to a specific trade show. And he went and he secured a deal that immediately changed his business and allowed it to grow. Now, since that time, Rhett had built this company and he since sold the company. But he was able to build that company into one of the fastest growing companies in the US, according to Inc. magazine. And since that time, Rhett had a great career with Wild Creations, and he's moved on now to start his own coaching business, helping other entrepreneurs to grow their businesses and to develop high performance daily practices that are going to help them to be on top of their game. In the veteran community, we have a lot of business owners. Veterans are amongst the highest population of entrepreneurs in the United States. And guess what? I don't think we should be satisfied with that. We should keep going. We need more veteran business owners. But it's tough out there. And so that's why I wanted to invite Rhett on. We need to have people who've been there in the business world, who've looked failure in the face, and who've clawed themselves out of that situation through determination and hard work to speak to our community. Rhett has since written a book. It's called The Entrepreneur's Book of Actions. And this book consists of a year's worth of essential daily exercises and habits for becoming wealthier, smarter, and more successful as an entrepreneur. We had a great conversation here. We talked a good bit about Rhett's history, his background, but also his advice for those of you out there who are thinking of turning the corner and building your own businesses. Like I said before, I think we need more veteran business owners, and I think that this podcast is going to give you a lot to think about if you are interested in building your own business. So without delay, let's get into this conversation with Mr. Rhett Power, the author of The Entrepreneur's Book of Actions, founder of Wild Creations, and elite business coach. Absolutely. Absolutely. I've read a bit about your story, and I know that back in 2009, you'd opened up this company and you were literally sleeping in a van, traveling from trade show to trade show, trying to get your company off the ground. And you were pretty much on your death ground. But I want to hear about that time, the beginning of your business, what that was like, and what you learned from it.
Well, it was a lot of power. There was a powerful motivation there not to go back to Afghanistan. So, sleeping in the van.
Why would you have had to go back to Afghanistan?
I was going to have to get a job, and so I was going to have to go back as a contractor or something. I was going to have to dig myself out of this financial hole, you know. I'm teasing a little bit, but at the same time, I'm not, because, I didn't want to go back to a job. I didn't want to go back to working for someone else. I didn't want to go back and have to start all over again. To answer your question, we just didn't want to quit, and we didn't want to give up, and we didn't want to throw in the towel. And so that was a really powerful motivator for us to keep going, to persevere, to sleep in the van, to save money. And we'll talk about the financial discipline. We'll talk about some of those things in a little bit, I think, when we get into the book. But it was to put everything on the table, give everything that we had to try to make this thing work. And that meant, if that meant eating cold can ravioli out of a, you know, in the back of the van at night for a couple of years, when we were doing our deliveries and doing our runs and going to shows, that's what it was. That's what we were going to do. And I don't think I knew that before going into it. I had this kind of rosy picture of what this might look like. But once we got into it and the reality struck and the, I mean, we 6 months in, the recession hit. Right. And so there was a whole new reality for us in that. And so, I mean, you either give up or you say, okay, this is what I've got to do right now to make it and survive and make this work. And I'm going to do that. I think everybody's got sort of a rosy picture of what entrepreneurship or business is going to look like when they first start, unless they grew up in it. My parents were teachers and they worked for the state. I didn't have any idea what entrepreneurship was going to be like. But I got a real reality check a few months in.
That's one of the things, because, I mean, if you look around at the media scape, particularly in self-help, we live in this time where I think it seems like everybody's trying to become an entrepreneur. And there's probably a million hours of content out there, a million pages written about how to be successful. But very seldom do we hear about how to fail and how to fail the right way. And what to do when your back's against the wall and you are on your death ground. And I think that a lot of people who get into entrepreneurship, especially, you know, myself, when I first got into it, we weren't expecting that at all. Not expecting the work, not expecting the canned ravioli and the ramen noodles, not expecting all of the crazy things that kind of came along with it. So in your mind, as people are, more and more people are jumping into entrepreneurship, what are the things that they need to know beforehand?
I think doing your homework. I think if you have partners, making sure your partners are all on the same page. You know, do they have the same desires, the same goals, the same vision for where this is going to go? I think that's key. I think your family and your friends, your spouse, your partner, whatever it is, need to know the deal, need to know what this is really going to look like, the reality of that. So I think being honest with them about that, the money constraints, and what, you know, I know that from my side, I told my, you know, wife, hey, you know, 6 months, we're going to be in the clear. We're good. You know, but that was just not knowing. And that was having this rosy picture that when we put together the business plan, that's what we had projected. Right. And I believed it. I honestly believed it. I thought that, you know, that's what I thought. But making sure that you're open and honest and have those tough conversations when you need to have them and tell people what the real deal is, finding the, you know, right people to hang out with and who support what you're doing and get it. And people who can be supportive. That's the way to make it work. I don't know that there's any secret, but I think understanding, you know, doing the reading that you should do and talking to people who've been in business so that you have I didn't talk to that many people who had done it. And if I had, you and I might not be talking today because I might not have started a business, you know, but I think it's you know, finding out the real deal from people who've done it, I think is really, really key. So that you go in with your eyes wide open.
So do you think maybe going in a little bit blind to the horrors on the poverty side of things, you think that's almost beneficial, or do you think you should have some awareness of that?
I like to know things, I guess. I don't like surprises. Boy, have I gotten used to surprises as an entrepreneur, and my tolerance and my ability to deal with change and surprises is I've gotten a lot better about that in my old age. I was kind of joking that I wouldn't have started it. I would have still jumped headfirst in if I'd have known. I think I would have been prepared. I don't think I would have done anything differently though. I think I would have kept going and done the same thing. Cause I think that was sort of I think some of those characteristics are innate, right? I think some people have higher tolerances and persevere better than others, I guess.
One of the other aspects of that story where you were sleeping in the van was that you had a vendor who told you to go to a specific conference, and it was kind of like your last chance. It was a trade show. And it was like your last ditch effort. And you ended up going to that trade show. And in a single weekend, you did millions of dollars of business. And that pretty much changed the story right then and there. And one of the things I know and I understand is that going from a state where you're near destitute to going to a state where you have lots of business, that brings all, you know, it's awesome, but it also brings its own set of problems as well. What types of things did you have to think about at that point?
That was mind-blowing, by the way. That just was a mind-blowing experience. That was a long ride back from New York to, we actually ended up after the show going to New Hampshire to make a deal with Brookstone. But from New Hampshire back to South Carolina, where we were based, that was a long 16-hour van ride with my business partner to get our head around what had just happened. I mean, we literally did. We went from maybe a $50,000 a year company to a $9 million company. I mean, and, you know, practically in a weekend. And it brought all kinds of challenges. It brought the biggest one that came to mind is we had no money to do any of it. And we had just said yes to all of this business. And it was like, I mean, the whole weekend, my partner was looking at me saying, we can't do this. We don't have any money to do this. We can't afford to do this. And I said, but we have to do this. I mean, it was just this whole debate of we don't know how to ship that product. We just signed a contract to ship product to 400 stores around the country. We have no idea how to do that. And so it brought logistics problems. It brought staffing problems. It brought scaling. You know, we didn't know how to scale the product to what we needed. It brought vendor issues and money issues. It brought, you know, all these structural issues around how do we deliver what we just promised we'd deliver. And what still amazes me to this day is that everybody came to bat to help us. We got in the car the next week and we had like six vendors around the country, and we went and saw every single one of them and took them the POs and showed them what was happening in the business. And every single one of them said, we'll give you credit. And the reason they had done that is because we had been paying our bills and trying to keep up with our bills and not getting behind. And we'd been good partners. Even though we were struggling, we had made that a priority. And every single one of them said, hey, don't worry, we'll take care of you. Like, you know,
we're going to get you. That's a lesson right there. That's a huge lesson right there. You know, treat people the right way so that they'll come to bat with you when the time comes.
We had a FedEx rep who was based in the state, and she was young and hungry. She went back to the corporate people in Tennessee and said, we got to help this company. We got to figure out how to ship their product. They brought in the boxing specialists and the technicians to figure out how to box this product up because it had breakable stuff in it. They dropped it and temperature controlled it. And they gave us a technology grant for like $10,000. They brought in computers and helped us set up a production line. I mean, everybody came to bat. And so, I mean, it made it work.
That's amazing. That's amazing. And so now going to your book, the Entrepreneur's Book of Actions, which I've got right here.
Yeah. Awesome.
absolutely. I've been going through this and I've been doing the exercises myself. And at the very beginning, there's a big emphasis on some of the things we've already talked about, which is getting your mind right before you go on this quest. And that involves, first and foremost, kind of figuring out what you want, right? What do you want out of this? What do you want out of your life? Can you talk to me a little bit about how you came up with this list of actions and why did you do it in the first place?
Well, I did it. The main reason I did it is because I felt like these were things that helped me along the way. This was advice that I got from all, you know, you talked a little while ago about millions of hours of content that's out there. And, you know, I had, I read, I tried to study, I tried to figure it all out as the business was growing and as we were evolving. And these are things that just over time that we found, whether it be from a coach, a mentor, or somebody I talked to, a vendor, or these are just the lessons that I learned along the way and I wanted to share them. And what I found was that writing at some point along the way, I think around in 2013, really became for me cathartic, and it became a way for me to process things and think about things. I've got the worst case of ADD in the world. So if I don't write things down and structure my day and structure my time, I get distracted, right? I mean, I can go off and follow a LinkedIn trail or an Inc. article or something way down an hour or two, and I've lost my way for the day. So this book was a way for me to structure my time and my energy and my focus and get it so that I knew what I was doing and I could manage it all. And because as an entrepreneur, you're overwhelmed, right? Mm-hmm. And you can get distracted and you can focus on the wrong things. You can not manage your time well. So to me, this was the fundamental, these are fundamentals. And if you get these fundamentals right, then everything else falls into place, I think.
Yeah. And, you know, you mentioned that, and I think that, just like, you know, most of our audience is combat veterans from the U.S. Army, U.S. Marine Corps. Just like in battle, I think that if you, get wrapped up and you get tunnel vision, you can end up in a place that you never wanted to be before or never wanted to be. You can end up on the wrong side of defeat. And I think that as you're getting into entrepreneurship, there's a million things that come at you at the same time. I mean, fires that get started, orders that need to be fulfilled, orders that didn't get through, product that people aren't satisfied with, trying to handle vendors, trying to handle a million emails coming in during the day, trying to handle all your phone calls. And that can really keep you from working on getting the business to become what you wanted it to become in the first place. Right. And so when you're writing this down, were you thinking back to your starting days? Were you trying to deconstruct that and really thinking about what you should have done at that point? Or did this stuff come to you in another way? Like as you're expanding and you're building on what you have right now, have you seen these things come to play and have they, you know, helped you along your way?
Yeah. I used to take notes of kind of daily of my challenges, right? Things mm-hmm. that kind of came my way. And I think everything in this book, you know, it's 52 chapters and it's an action every day of the year. Mm-hmm. So it's structured a little bit differently. But every single one of these issues are things that I face as an entrepreneur. I think some of it is going back and deconstructing something that happened and looking at it and trying to pick it apart and see what we did well, what we didn't do well. I think there are other instances in here where I learned a hard lesson. I got burned. I did something that I shouldn't have done. I said something I shouldn't have done. I didn't do something I should have done. And I tried to put them in here, put those lessons in here, to help other people. And for me, this is all stuff that I either did well or didn't do well. And I learned from, and so that was the motivation. I took, when I wrote the book, I took all of my notes from that period of time and from the other businesses since then that we've started and really sort of said, okay, these are things I think are key to your success. And if you get these small basic things. I mean, none of this stuff in here is complicated. It's all stuff that we know. It's all stuff that we've read an Inc. article about or a Forbes article about or a book about, right? It's all things we know we should do. But as you said, you know, we get caught up in the whirlwind of the everyday. And these are the things that we put aside. These are the things that we cut corners on.
Right. And it's kind of that saying, it's simple, but not easy. And
right.
You know, I've definitely been that guy with my businesses who felt so overwhelmed that I'd be sitting there for hours staring at a computer screen, wondering what the hell I should be doing. And you know, wondering, should I be trying to do this social media stuff? Should I be, you know, trying to start a podcast or things like that? And so at the end of the day, I think it helps. And what this book does is it gives you something that puts you onto a roadmap to getting your mind right and to take the actions that you need in small chunks to get to success.
Right. It gives you that time because I think, you know, the biggest lessons I learned in the business, and you said it a little while ago, was we didn't grow for the first couple of years. We were just spinning our wheels. Mm-hmm. And that trade show changed it. But what that trade show illustrated to us was, and what it made us do, actually forced us to do, was we can no longer go make those deliveries. We can no longer keep going to those trade shows every weekend because we had to spend the next 4 months figuring out how we were going to deliver on this new business. Right. We couldn't give up the old business. We didn't want to give up the old business. But what we knew is we had to get some people. We needed help. We needed to delegate. We needed to do all of that better. And we needed to teach somebody to do what we had been doing so that we could grow the business. So basically getting off the truck, right? We had to get off the truck and out of the truck and get in the business and start thinking. We had to start using our heads. And that was a really powerful lesson. But I think that's what transformed business. When we start thinking and working on the main things, the things that were going to grow the business, man, it skyrocketed.
I think that's huge to understand, particularly right now, because if you look at what it takes to open up a business these days, it actually takes less than it ever has before. I mean, you can literally start a business with a website, an email inbox. You could do on-demand fulfillment. You can get somebody to do the manufacturing for you and things like that. And it really doesn't take much. But what you have to start thinking about at a certain point is how you're going to add infrastructure there and how you're going to take all these daily tasks that you end up doing yourself and how you're going to get them into the hands of good people who could actually do them better than you could. So that you focus on what you need to focus on, because you can't hire somebody to be you. You can't hire somebody to develop your vision, and you can't hire somebody to spread your message.
Right. Now, in the book, what I'd like about, for me, about the book was it forces me to work on something every day. And I was going to make that point earlier, and I didn't. But it stops me. It gives me a reason to stop the chaos, because you're not going to get rid of the chaos. The chaos is always going to be there.
Right.
But what it does is it forces you to slow down, take that 20 or 30 minutes every day for you and focus on things that are going to make you a better leader, a more efficient leader, a more effective leader, right? And that's what the other main point of the book for me is that it forces you as a leader to stop and think and write and make your list, think about the strategic stuff. And that's critical to you growing as a leader, getting better as a leader, because if you don't take that time out for you and your own personal development and your own thinking about the business strategically, then you're going to get caught in that perpetual cycle. And I know what that perpetual cycle feels like, and it feels like you're drowning. I've been, just like you said, I've been at the computer thinking, shit, what's next? Like, yeah. I'm looking at my to-do list, and it's like, I don't even know where to begin.
Right.
It's just right. That overwhelming feeling. Right. And I think the point of the book was to sort of stop that and try to get you out of that cycle of, this feeling like it's never ending.
Yeah, that's a huge one. I want to pull it back just a little bit and to ask you this. Your company's called Wild Creations, and it's a toy company, correct?
Mm-hmm. We sold it. I sold that company a few years ago. So
okay. And what were you doing prior to that? What were you doing before that?
So prior to that, I had done a lot of different jobs. I was a radio station DJ and manager. Mm-hmm. I was in sales. I was in political consulting. I mean, I did a lot of things. But in 1999, I went into the Peace Corps.
Wow.
And was in Uzbekistan in the Peace Corps. And then after Peace Corps, I was worked for USAID overseas. And I worked on economic development programs. And for about 6 years in the former Soviet Union in Central Asia, I worked on some really massive economic development projects where we were trying to get small, medium enterprises that had, during that period, they were transitioning from a Soviet kind of a command economy to a market-based economy. And our thinking back then was that if we help them do this, then we're not going to have an issue with young men turning to, extremism. We're going to help create jobs. We're going to help stabilize those economies so that we don't have a problem with Al-Qaeda and, mm-hmm. the Taliban and the Islamic movement of Uzbekistan and some of the groups that formed in that time. And so, I mean, it was fascinating work because I was working with companies, good companies that used to be state owned, who all of a sudden one day this manager at this company got the keys and said, "Oh, now it's yours. Now, nobody's going to tell you how much bread to make anymore. You got to go figure that out." And so that was fascinating. And we worked with hundreds and hundreds of companies that, were trying to figure out how to now be entrepreneurs and how to run these companies and, how to, create jobs and do, do what they were doing. So that was really interesting.
Yeah. The reason I asked that, I just had Robert Greene, the author of the 48 Laws of Power and Mastery and the Laws of Human Nature on the show. And one of the things about him is that he had over 80 jobs before his first book took off. And one of the things he said was that, for everything he did from, private investigation to working in Hollywood to working construction, there was something there that had prepared him to do what he's doing now. And I could see that with what you've done with USAID and with the Peace Corps. And there's probably a million other instances out there of things that kind of prepared you for that singular moment when you were able to make that deal. And the reason I say that is because there are no overnight successes. And I think people have to understand that.
No, I credit several things in my life. I credit my parents for an incredible work ethic and making me work as a teenager and for things that I wanted, I credit the Peace Corps for letting me know that I can do anything. I can survive anything. I can live in a small place and with no electricity and no water, and I can actually really enjoy it. So there are all kinds of life lessons that I think kind of prepared me for that time in my life and for being able to get through it and suck it up. And I mean, I hate that word, but in a way you do, right? You just say, okay, I'm going to make it. You tell yourself, you convince yourself that this is not bad, that we're going to do this and we're going to do whatever we have to do. And I think all those experiences, like you said, I think that's a great question, kind of prepare you for that moment. Right.
Absolutely. As you just spoke about, you had your exit from that company and now you're in coaching, right? And
correct.
You're helping others to develop their businesses. how are you finding that work? And when did you decide, okay, I need to take what I know and I need to go out there and I need to help other people with this?
I love it, man. I found what I was, what I'm meant to do. And it was all, I'm not one of these people that has this grand life plan. You know, I'm not one of these people that, had a plan when I was 20 and knew what I was going to be doing when I was 45 or 50 or whatever it was. I've kind of, I won't say like let life take me, but I've sort of followed my heart and my gut and kind of made a turn when a turn came up that I thought I needed to take. And it's led me to this and coaching, I stumbled into it. I mean, when I was in Peace Corps, I was teaching at this university and I loved it. I mean, I loved teaching. I loved preparing for the classes. And then I got into business and, you know, as a manager and an owner of a company, you're also a coach, right? And yep. You kind of play a lot of different roles and you're kind of a teacher again. And, so that is natural. And it, for me, I really enjoy it. The business coaching is I have fun sharing my experience. I have fun, asking questions. I have fun. To me, all of it I'm not like a kid in a candy store the other thing for me is it's different every day. I get to see and hear different challenges. And so again, for me, with ADD, like I have, it's great because it's not boring. It's not one thing every day. It's not the same thing every day. It's not the same challenge. And, so working with people who have issues and who are trying to figure it out and who want to figure it out, is the best job. I couldn't ask for something. I don't think I could do anything else that I love more.
That's amazing. And one of the things I want to ask you about this, because like I said, we live in an interesting time. And if you look at the coaching industry itself, it's the second fastest growing industry next to tech. And literally, you know, that's just the International Coach Federation statistics. I mean, I think it's probably a lot more because there's people who simply open up an Instagram account and they're a coach and they're a life coach or a fitness coach and things like that. What's your take on this? Because I think that, you know, someone like yourself who's, you know, been there, done that, worn the t-shirt, who's going into this after a life of thought and action, versus somebody who's kind of just jumping into this and maybe taking a certification, but probably not. And then just kind of, pushing themselves out there as a coach. I don't want to come at them in a hostile way, but what would you say to somebody like that who is maybe on that road and what direction would you point them in to maybe get onto a better path?
I would switch the question around a little bit. Mm-hmm. Because I don't think you're going to change the flood of people coming into the industry.
Right.
You will, because I think they're going to find that it's really hard to get clients and they're going to find that it's really hard. It's not an easy business. Mm-hmm. And it's, you know, there are a gazillion philosophies and there are a million certifications and, you know, I don't know what any of it honestly means. Mm-hmm. But what I would say to that, I would reverse that and say, if you're hiring a coach, mm-hmm. there are things, and I hope I'm not stealing a question from you, I would put the emphasis on, if you're hiring a coach or you're thinking you want a coach, that you do your due diligence before you hire somebody, because there are a bunch of people who are hanging their shingle out saying, I'm a coach. Mm-hmm. And I think before you hire a coach, you need to know what your goals are for that coaching, right?
Right.
You have a clear understanding of why you're doing it. Mm-hmm. And you interview that person thoroughly, or multiple people. You find out their experience and their success and their You ask for, you know, references. You do it as if you're hiring anybody else in your company. You take that same care in hiring a coach. And what it ultimately comes down to is your gut feeling on, can they help me?
Right.
Get where I go.
Exactly. Because they're going to become part of your team.
Right. Do they complement? I mean, things I look for in a coach, and I have a coach too. So, you know, it goes both ways. But I look for somebody that has complementary or opposite skills that I do that can push me to be better in areas where I'm weak, right? Mm. Somebody that can be open and honest with me and brutally honest. Somebody that can not sugarcoat it and blow smoke. You know, somebody that's going to say and call me on my bull.
Yes.
You know, so I'm looking for all of that when I look for my own coach. And I think that's what I would say. I don't know if you're going to change that flood of people coming in, but I think you can get people to make better decisions when they hire somebody.
Right. Right. And so when you're working with a client, and I'm sure you work with people from across various industries. I'm sure you work with different types of personalities. What's the first step you'll normally take with them? Will you kind of look at what they're doing, what their lives are like? Do you follow the steps you laid out in the Entrepreneur's Books of Actions?
Well, yes. I mean, number one, I think depending on what kind of engagement we're doing, because we're not only just coaches, but we have a business advisory practice. So I'd say a fair amount of our business is business advising. And it's not so much coaching as it is helping them fix a marketing system or put a marketing system in place or a sales system in place or an HR system in place or a financial system in place. So we do a lot of that, and we help people in change management a lot who came into the same kind of situation we got into, right? They're growing quickly. So we're helping them sort of through that transition and that growth phase. That's a lot of what we do. The coaching aspect of it always comes into play in some way, though, right? So it just happens that I can sit down and have a conversation about your leadership, as a CEO or the owner of the company, and that sometimes sort of transitions into some coaching work that we do, and it depends on what they want to accomplish. A lot of what our philosophy on coaching is that it's going to depend on what, you know, the CEO, the leader of that company wants, right? What they're focused on, what their goals are. And that's the emphasis that really drives a lot of our coaching, is what they want to accomplish, what they see as their deficits, where they think they need to grow, where they need to be better communicators, whether they need to be stronger skills in particular areas. So we work with them on those, improving those skill sets and those challenges that they're facing.
Awesome. That's okay. And so with the coaching business, so you went from a product-based business, right, where you're dealing with hard products, toys, and then now you're going into a service-based business. What's mm-hmm. similar? What's different?
I think, to me, there's not a whole lot of difference. And I'll say the reason why. I think that structurally, business is the same whether you're doing a hard product or you're doing a service, mm-hmm. right? You've got customers. You've got to serve them well. You've got vendors. You got to pay your bills. You got vendors that you owe, and that service your company and help you do better by your customers. You've got employees. You got to take care of them. Same kind of issues. So to me, you've got to manage your money. You've got to manage the finances. You've got to manage all of the same sort of things. In my case, this is a little bit easier because I'm not running back and forth to China every other month. I'm not trying to get a product. So this has actually been easier to me mm-hmm. than the product-based business. But that's the only difference, is I'm not on a plane all the time trying to get a plastic part to fit into this, you know, piece here, or I'm not going through safety testing, or I'm not doing, you know, I'm not running back up and forth to Toys R Us all the time trying to make a sale. So, you know, to me, it's a little bit easier. It's easier to manage in that sense, but the fundamentals, I think, are the same. And I think the fundamentals are the same no matter what kind of business you're in.
Awesome. And I want to ask this because we have a lot of our veterans out there in the audience who are in transition right now. So they're coming out of the military. They're trying to figure out what they're doing with their lives, what they're going to do. Are they going to go to college? Are they going to go and try to get a contracting position? Are they going to start their own businesses? And so a question is going to center on a couple of things. Number one, if you want to become an entrepreneur and you don't have a business idea, what in your mind is the best thing or the first thing you should do to try to develop an idea, to try to figure out what you're going to provide? And then number two, when it comes to actually making that choice, what should be the deciding factor as to whether you go down the entrepreneurial road or you decide I'm going to be a career person or I'm going to pursue my education?
Great question. This is the golden age of buying businesses. And I actually believe that, I mean, if you look at baby boomers, they're retiring in huge numbers.
Right.
Right. And that's the largest demographic of five demographics that are in the workplace today. Baby boomers are the largest. Mm-hmm. They're retiring. You know, the 50 and 60 year olds, they're selling their businesses. They're retiring from their businesses. And so there are going to be more businesses for sale in the next 5 to 10 years and more opportunities to buy really good businesses that are existing and doing really well and could provide a really good lifestyle and actually could use an infusion of energy and creativeness. Right. So I think that is an enormous opportunity, and there's more money available than there's ever been. It's easier to get into a business like that. So I'm actually really excited about the opportunities in the near future of people being able to, you know, that 20-year-old, 30-year-old, 40-year-old buying these existing businesses, and they're not for sale for things that, you know, for bad reasons. They're for sale because people are retiring and right. They don't have anybody to pass it to. So I think that there's a real opportunity for that. I mean, I think that is just incredible. And I really believe in that too, because I don't think all of us are going to create the next Microsoft or create the next, you know, the next best thing. You know, that's just really rare. Most of us are going to run or can run really good local, regional, you know, type businesses. Right. Mm-hmm. And I think that there's a need for that. And so I think that that's a tremendous opportunity. So the other thing I would say is buy a company or look at a company that really excites you. And I'll give you an example. I laugh at this every time I say it. We looked at dozens and dozens of businesses to buy when we came back from Central Asia. Mm-hmm. And the funniest one I ever saw, it had a $3.5 million EBITDA. It had state and local contracts. He had patents on body bags. This was a dead body remover company.
Oh, wow.
Okay. And I guess when you pass away in South Carolina, or probably in most states, the city or the state has a contract to transport. And he just transported. He transported from whatever happened to the morgue or to the hospital, whatever. And he was 70 years old. He was retiring. He didn't have a someone to pass it to. He wanted to sell it. And huge. I mean, just he was making money left hand over fist. I could not get excited about that. I just, as financially attractive as it was, I said, you know what? I can't wake up every day and do this. It's just, you know, now on the flip side of that, our attorney gave us a letter one day from this small toy company in Myrtle Beach, one product, no books, nothing to base the business on, no financials. He said, if you buy this, I'm going to disown you. This is a terrible company, a terrible investment. But we went down and looked at it anyway. We fell in love with it, and that's what we bought. And so, you know, I think you have to get into something you could get excited about. And the reason we bought it is because we went to a trade show with him one weekend, and all weekend long, we saw the kids lined up six people deep clamoring for this product. And he said, you know what? That's going to be fun.
Yeah.
That's going to, I can get up every day and make kids smile.
And that's proof of concept right there too. If people are lining up for it and getting excited about it, then that's definitely something you want to be a part of.
Right. And again, he was selling it because he was older. He wanted to go spend time with his kids up in New York. And he didn't want to do it anymore. And he was sort of a seasonal thing for him. And he had no desire to scale it. He had no desire to put the energy into it that it was going to take. And so you can find gems like that all over the, I mean, you can find those kind of businesses. And, wow. And that's what I would say is find something that's going to get you excited. I don't think you have to have experience in it. We didn't have experience in the toy industry. We didn't have experience in dead body removal either. None of that. I'm not a person that says you got to have, you know, a direct experience in the industry or the business you're getting into. I actually think that actually helped us. Mm-hmm. I actually fired a consultant once because everybody said, oh, you've got to bring in a toy consultant. You got to bring in somebody that knows the business. And he was so condescending to us. Oh, you can't do things like that. That's not how the business works. And we said, well, hell with the way the business is supposed to work. This is what we want to do.
Right.
And so we just weren't on the same page. But I think that's sort of how we look at it, how I look at it.
Let me ask you this, because I was reading something the other day. I think it's 67% of millennials who have less than $2,000 in their bank account right now. And I would have to say that it's a large part of our audience being millennials coming out of the military, having not gotten paid tons and tons of money over the past few years.
Right.
What would you do if you wanted to become an entrepreneur, but you literally did not have the money right now? What would your steps be to try to get to a position to where you could eventually own your own business?
Great question. I think it comes down to habits. So what I believe is that, you look at all the bad habits that we have, right? I think the average American spends 4, 5, 6 hours a day on watching television and on social media. We spend money on things we don't need. You know, if you want it bad enough, you're going to go get that second job. You're going to work and save and not spend. You know, you're going to keep that iPhone an extra 2 years. You know, you're going to drive. Until really in the last couple of years, man, I drove cars into the ground. I'd buy a used car and I still don't buy new cars. I buy and I keep them forever. Mm-hmm. Right. You get rid of the car payment by driving an older vehicle. You know, you do things that are going to cut your cost. You look for ways not to spend, and you save, and you know, you work that extra job, you work those weekends, you start that side hustle, that you start that company, but you do it small and you build it. And you continue working on another job at another job until you get it to the point where you can quit. You know, you do everything you can and you find ways to make it work. That's what I would say. Because if you really want it, you'll cut out those bad habits. You'll stop watching TV 4 hours a day. You'll go you'll sell those products on Amazon. You'll box up those products on Amazon and send them out. You'll work that second, you know, you'll do what you have to do.
That's awesome. And Where does the future hold for you? I know you're currently traveling. I know your wife's job requires travel, and you're out actually outside of the country right now. What does the future hold for you as far as coaching, as far as other business ventures, as far as where you're going?
Well, it's exciting. I'm joining the Marshall Goldsmith 100 Coaches group, which is a real honor. That's some of the best coaches, executive coaches, and best executives in the world. That's a small group, but it's a very elite group. And I've learned, one of my mentors, Mark Thompson, is one of the best executive coaches in the world. And so just learning from that group of people is really exhilarating. A few of us that are in that group are forming a new company. So my company, Power Coaching, is actually going to be merging into a new company called Access Strategies. And that is going to be, that's a real exciting, that's four of us are coming together with our coaching. All of our coaching companies are being merged into that one. And so that's going to be, that's exciting to me, because we're all talented in different ways and have different experiences and different, and that's going to give us a ability to go after larger client bases and more corporate clients, and sort of grow on a larger scale. I think I'm going to keep my practice within that new company of the small and medium-sized enterprises. That's where my passion is. But what it's going to provide, though, is it's going to provide a whole nother wealth of knowledge that I can lean on and I can, you know, count on to help clients. I mean, what I love about it is I'm going to be able to, with that new talent coming in, provide services, world-class services, to Main Street businesses that only, you know, if you hired Accenture or one of the big companies some of the technology and some of the tools are going to really help us help small companies.
It's awesome. I love the passion in your voice as you're talking about that and the excitement. That's amazing.
That's amazing. That's what the future holds. I don't think I can envision doing anything else, because I think it's, I'm just having fun and to see people grow and take their companies places that they hadn't even dreamed of. I think that's good stuff for me.
Definitely. And, I know you write for a number of different publications. Mm-hmm. Where can people find you online? Whether it be via Twitter, whether it be via one of the other social platforms?
Well, great question. This Power Lunch Live, that's a new LinkedIn show that I do Tuesday through Friday on LinkedIn. That's a live show. It's been a lot of fun. Been doing that for about 4 months now. But I also write for Forbes, so you can go to Rep Power and check it. You know, go to Forbes and then type in Rep Power, and that'll bring up my columnist page. Also for Inc. Inc.com, same thing. Rep Power at Inc.com and Thrive Global. And then CEO World. I'm also starting a new column at CEO World. And so you can find me there. But the Power Lunch Live is every day. And that's been a lot of fun. And that's where I'd love people to come and take a listen.
Awesome. And you said that's up on LinkedIn. Is it also, is it on your website as well? Is there a link to it on the website?
So the new website for the show is powerlunch.live, and that's got the upcoming schedule of guests. And so on LinkedIn, you know, LinkedIn's got this new platform, their live platform. And so there are no direct links to it. You can go to my LinkedIn feed and we can connect on LinkedIn, and then you'll get notified. But if you just go to the Power Lunch Live hashtag on LinkedIn, it'll take you to all the past shows. And then those shows are also up on my YouTube channel. And I'm turning it into a podcast as well. Since it's a video program, it's a live sort of broadcast program, I'm converting the broadcast into just the podcast. So there are a million ways to listen to the program. I turn a lot of those programs into articles for Forbes and Inc. And so multiple ways. If you just type in rep power in Google, it'll take you to all those.
Outstanding. Any last words for the audience here?
I would say this, man. You know, success, in my view, comes down to prioritizing your work. It comes down to discipline. It comes down to good habits, and clarity of mission. I think if you focus on those things, I don't really think it matters what kind of business you're in. If you do those things really, really well, and you do those things really well every day, you're going to be successful.
Outstanding. Rhett, I appreciate you coming on here. And, I just want to acknowledge you. I admire somebody who's gone through the struggle and who's come out the other end, lived to tell the tale, but then goes back and then helps to advise others. And I appreciate that. And the fact that you came on to this show today to speak to our audience, to veterans, we really appreciate that and you delivering your wisdom here. So thank you very much.
Well, I think that your audience, has a special place in my heart. And I think for most people in the country, they have a special place in everybody's heart. But I also think the military, having gone to military school and I wasn't in the military, but I think the things that you learn in the military really serve you well in business. Mm-hmm. I think discipline and focus and duty and that sense of all of that, the work ethic. I think that, you know, if you apply those things that you learn, the lessons that you learn in the military to business, you'll knock it out of the park, man, because that's the key to success.
It's huge. Absolutely huge. Well, again, thank you so much. And to everybody out there in the audience, you know, listen to this episode, go back, pull out a pen and a piece of paper and write down some of these notes, because there's loads of advice that we just went through over the past hour or so that could absolutely change your perspective and your life. The other thing I'd highly suggest is going to check out Rhett's book, The Entrepreneur's Book of Actions. It is a fantastic book that really breaks down daily activities that you can do to put you onto that path. And I'm going through it right now. I'm doing the exercises in my journal and I found it extraordinarily helpful. So guys, listen, apply this stuff. Don't just listen, learn and apply and, you know, get out there and live your best lives while you can. Thank you guys so much for listening and we are out. All right, guys. So I hope you enjoyed that interview with Mr. Rhett Power. I think there's a whole lot of value there in hearing his story of perseverance and determination in getting his business to become successful. I think that it's really important that we hear from people like Rhett in the veteran community. He's not a veteran himself, but stories like that, surrounding yourself with people who've been able to obtain success, who know what it's like to start from scratch. You need to be able to do that. And that's one of the things and one of the reasons why this podcast exists, to bring those ideas, those strategies, and those people to you. Make sure that you check the show notes for this episode. They'll be up on the Warrior Soul Agoge site. We'll have links over to Rhett's book. We'll have links to his podcast and links to his coaching website. I also wanted to talk to you guys briefly about something that we have going on here at Warrior Soul, and that is the Warriors Obituary Society. It was created to empower men to live absolutely epic lives worthy of epic obituaries. And what it involves is an 8-week development program up front. We work on your vision, your goals. We work on your fitness. We work on your relationships, and we work on defining where you're going to go in this life. That is so important for you to figure out as soon as possible, because without that, you don't really know what you're working for. And without knowing that, you start to lack motivation and you start to let yourself go in multiple areas of your life. Once our members get through that 8-week development program, what they do is they take their seats as members of the Warriors Obituary Society, and that's where the work really begins. We're holding each other accountable to goals, we're meeting each week on live calls, and we're pushing each other to become better and stronger every single week. We have our own private forum. We don't do any of this over social media. There's not going to be anybody looking over your shoulder. There is not going to be any distractions. We keep our forum on Slack. If you ever used Slack before, it's a really awesome chat platform where you can keep up communications within your organization. We also have a Voxer group where we communicate via voice. If you guys are interested, let me know. I'm going to put a link to it up on the show notes, or you can DM me on Instagram at Warrior Soul Agogi or Warrior Soul Podcast. And you can email me at chris@warriorsoulagogi.com. One of the things I did intentionally with this is I didn't make the cost extremely high. A lot of these types of courses out there on the internet are worth thousands of dollars. I specifically wanted to encourage members of our community to join. There are so many of you who have so much potential, and you need to take advantage of that while you're alive, while you're here, while you're breathing. We don't get forever here on this earth, and we need to live now. So hopefully I'll see you guys there. And either way, if you're getting something out of this podcast, please, please let people know that we exist. Share these episodes out with friends and head over to iTunes and write us a written rating and review. And with that, I want to thank you guys so much for listening. We're going to be back at you next week with more awesome episodes on the Warrior Soul Podcast. Get out there and live your best lives while you can. And I am out.